Hi, welcome to our lunchtime date together with me, John Ballum. I am an organizational development consultant, I'm an educator, and I'm a coach with a passion for lifelong learning. With me today is my partner in crime, Gifty.
Hi everyone, I'm Gifty Parker, HR professional with a background in learning and development, performance management, as well as talent management.
So for the next 20 minutes, we invite you to sit back, find a glass of something nice, and enjoy an unusual conversation with us. Hi, Gifty. Great to be here together with you again today.
It's a lovely opportunity to be with you, John.
I realize our listeners are really busy people. Maybe it's their lunch hour. So maybe today I want to give them a bit of an outline in terms of what we're going to be talking about. So could you do that? What are the three or four most important aspects of what we're going to be discussing today?
Oh, yes, sure, John. Today is actually an interesting one. We will be taking further our topic from series one, from episode one, from our series number two, embracing change and fostering connectivity. To be able to talk further about this, we're going to be focusing on a few areas. One of the areas is looking at what exactly is it to embrace a hybrid model? You know, talking about transparency, communication under that particular topic. Then we're going to move on to reimagining the physical space. You know, when we talk about physical space, post-pandemic, are there different ways of actually looking at the physical space? Are there different ways organizations should consider when making plans for collaboration, for innovation? And then we'll talk about managing the fundamental human needs, coming back into a physical space, coming back into status quo, or even adopting new ways of working requires the need to pay attention to how people are working and manage that work-life boundaries to ensure that each person within the workspace is doing well, the mental well-being. So those are some of the things we'll talk about today, and we'll be throwing in questions in the middle just to make sure we address fully these key areas.
Yeah, because I think, like you do, Gifty, that the pandemic threw us into the space, all of us, in a bit of a panic, and maybe there's a need now for some more refined thinking as we move forward. We reacted, we coped. But, you know, coping is not a great way to live. Yeah, we don't want to just cope on the edge of a crisis all the time. We want to be able to manage properly. So, yeah, it's a great topic, this.
No, I agree. And even being back into the physical space for majority of businesses, I still see that people are trying to catch up. You know, we had such a big gap, interruption in the way business was being, you know, ran. And people are really trying to catch up and missing those key things that they should consider as they come back or embrace a particular work module. So hoping that these questions will be something that our listeners can, you know, tap into and draw from as we, you know, cover a few questions. It's a long shot and a beautiful one as well to present.
Because I don't think we ever can go back again. We can partly come back to work, but people have been changed. Their psyches have been changed forever from what happened in the pandemic in terms of how they work. Yeah. And we are going to have to, I guess, roll with that change and make it work as opposed to resist it and try and like reverse history, because that, in my mind, that is never going to happen. There's something fundamentally has gone on inside people where they've had the experience of working from home, for example. And some of that is really productive and really good, and some of it needs re-examining. But the point is that something big has happened. And so, yeah, I'm really happy that we're here talking about this today.
I agree. I don't think you said that, you know, going back. And that is so fundamental, because when we talk about, you know, people have experienced the pandemic differently and changes to their life has been different for each person. Organization, businesses, leaders today are just so quick in exploring solutions, exploring ways to get things going, get the business moving, and forgetting that need, you know, to get down to what can we do differently for people, because their lives have been changed. Their perspective on work and nature of work, it's really changed. And we see that today. We see that today in candidates coming on board. We see that today in employees who are already on board. And reviewing what has changed and how can we incorporate that or manage that goes a long way. So we have a few questions, actually. So talking about embracing a hybrid model.
Right.
I love that concept. And I see a lot of organizations doing that today. Organizations do things from coming to work 4 times a day to coming to work 2 times a day and then working remotely the other time. So a mixture, different options are currently available to employees. At Packer HR Solutions, we actually have a 4-day work week where,
right,
you know, you still get that 3 days being off, but the 4-day work week is now a new way of working. And those 4 days, mostly done remotely, but you have that option of going to the office. Because I know I've worked with, especially the interns who love that discipline of being in an office space and being at their desk. So we make that option available. Now, while we have that option, we also want to make sure that organizations are aware when we talk about hybrid module, when we talk about coming into work and having options, what does it mean for their employees at different level? Is it the same? Is the solution or the option they've made available, is it applicable to employees at different level? Mm-hmm. And when we say different level, we're talking about employees on the executive level, employees on the mid level, employees who are those grassroots of the organization. Would it be the same whatever option they've chosen? So that's one question that we should kind of address before we go over some of those stages or action points. Mm-hmm.
So I just want you to clarify that for me for a moment, Gifty. When you say what options, just be a little bit more specific so our listeners can get a real handle on that.
Absolutely. So when we talk about hybrid work, today organizations have different terminology or different definition or different acceptance or option for hybrid work. Mm-hmm. So hybrid simply means you're doing remote and you're also doing physical. So it's more of a mixture of it. The pandemic caused a lot of people to work remotely, but now organizations are slowly bringing people back into that physical space.
Right.
And they try to mix it up. So I've had clients who have employees working, for example, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you work from home. Thursday and Friday, you're at the physical location. I've also had clients who made it 2 days in the week, you're working from home. They get to choose what is preferable to them. So if I'm a mother and I know, okay, I don't have childcare on a Tuesday, I can opt for, okay, Tuesdays I work from home. So they give different opportunities for people in terms of this is what you should consider. There are also organizations who mandated it. On Thursdays, we are all in the location. And again, that could be as a result of their line of business, what they do. So options are those variety. And there are some organizations where it's 100% in person, where they are not taking the hybrid work.
Like traditional, right? We go back to work.
Traditional, exactly.
Right. Okay. So my question is, in your HR consultancy, what have the best organizations done that you've worked with that have prepared employees to work with the hybrid model, both at home and the office? So what do these organizations do that really works, that so the employees feel really happy with this arrangement? What have you seen in practice that's made it work?
That's actually a good question, and I like it because most of the organizations I've interacted with found themselves continuously evolving in terms of the options that they have. And I like that because they are aware that you can't have one size fitting all, and you can't have one size being applicable in all circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So they are finding ways to give options to the employee, and they are finding ways to make changes and make available to people practical options that works most for them. So I have an organization who have told employees transparency in what they're considering. We are going with working remotely, and they give a justification for that.
Mm-hmm.
An example is a constructing firm. They actually moved away from a physical location. So most of their activities are online. They do have a physical location, which is an office where they have somebody with paperwork, manual, but nobody goes there because a lot of their work is at locations. So they do construction.
Right.
And in that case, everyone works remotely. But they are also aware that they are demographic of employees who still want that contact, that connection, that going out. So they have a space. They have a space where you can go do that and see things, make that comfortable.
Right.
So I think when we look at what the best option is, we have to look at the best option, or we have to ask the question, the best option for who?
Mm-hmm.
Because people will be very, very different. And the same organization that has no physical location are having a staff meeting, which is my first time to meet their team. And I remember saying, okay, we're doing a staff meeting. How do we want to do this staff meeting? Because I would like to meet your team. And we were thinking about options. And it was very important to make available for all people who want to be in that physical space and for people who want to work from either a client location or work from their home. So we created a way to be part of a training section, introduction to their HR consultant, where you could be there in person, or you could simply just log online. So I'm still navigating how to engage people in the physical space and people who will be online, because that's what their training is going to be. And we're actually talking about mental health and well-being. So that's actually a beautiful training. We have people who are in-person, people who are online, and I'm looking for activities where I can engage those in front of me and those who are logged in to actually listen to the section. So what organizations are doing is listening and being transparent what options are available and how those options are specific to their own business needs. And listen, because sometimes the solution comes from the employees. The employees will give you ideas. You know, they will tell you, okay, in my role, this is what I think. And then together, they can kind of build that framework or build that option that is best for their organization. So it's not like company A is doing 2 days online and the rest in person, and we're going to do the same. No, you have to take a moment and think of the scenario that will be best mapped out for your people, for your employees.
I like that. I had an experience, you know, related to that recently, which is kind of a difficult one to share, but I think it's important that we put this out on the table here. So I'm sitting with a senior manager of a large organization, and we're talking about this hybrid model. And he says to me, oh, it's fantastic, John. So I'm like, oh, it's great. He's embraced it, which he obviously has. He said, it's just phenomenal in terms of cost cutting. And I actually went cold. I went absolutely cold, you know. I knew what was behind this. And I was, you know, as a consultant, I've been fired a few times. And this maybe I was going to get fired again because I was going to be too direct. So I said to him, why do you say that? He said, oh, look, it's obvious. You know, there's an office space. He said, we're saving thousands. And then I dropped the bomb. I said, well, short term you might be, but long term you're going to lose. And he looked at me quite startled. He said, but what do you mean? You've shaved all this off the budget. I said, no. Of those thousands you've saved, my suggestion is you take the majority of that and you reinvest it in training and supporting those people in how to deliver this hybrid model the best way possible. You know, from their technology at home to how to develop great, training them to develop good online presences when they have to use Zoom a lot. It's not just cost cutting. So that money, you won't think short term, sure, you'll save some money, but actually you'll lose it long term because this is a traditional change management process. And any seasoned business practitioner will tell you that real change, effective change, takes budget, takes a lot of thinking about and a lot of planning to get it right for the organization. And he sat there, and the silence lasted for a while. You know, and I eventually said, look, I'm really sorry. I don't mean to have offended you or shocked you. And he just looked at me stunned. And he said, you're right. We've got a lot to think about. And I've now been invited back to talk to him some more. So maybe I haven't been fired. But this is one of the big issues with the hybrid model. You know, it's not just, people are going to work from home. We can downscale a whole bunch of things. It's how are we going to do this as effective change?
I love this particular example that you shared, John. And I'm actually happy that for the sake of our listeners, that that actually was a situation that you could share, because I feel the gap here is a lot of organizations do not take the time to actually understand. We all talk about money. Oh, working remotely, it's very expensive. Or some people may say working physical location is very expensive. But if we consider how to transform your workplace in terms of what will produce, what will be the best return of your investment, because each one of these options would have their limitations.
Yes.
So it's all about understanding, yes, we know hybrid work is the new normal, but is hybrid work for your organization?
Right.
Right?
Right.
And if so, what are some strategies that you have in place to ensure that a remote work can impact your organization financially in a good way? Right. So again, we find people taking or trying to adopt what works for one organization and adopt it to theirs without necessarily looking at their circumstances. So people need to develop approach, you know, strategically, ways that they can get their remote team or have a combination of both, get the work done in an effective way. And it's not one person that will do that. It involves that collaboration, getting everybody involved. Because one of the best ideas I've actually had most of the time comes from my team.
Yes.
So you have to get them involved. You have to get them, because to think about it, it's all about them and what option works for them. So making the decision in a vacuum is actually going to hurt the organization in the long run. So that was a good one. I love it.
Back on that, I also love this one, you know, which I've been giving a lot of reflection to, is we've got to, I think, in like anything in life, we've got to become more clear and direct about what it is we want. So in other words, in our job descriptions, if we are using the hybrid model and we're going to be wanting to recruit hybrid workers, we need to start spelling out, this is what we require. Okay, we need a hybrid worker. To be a hybrid worker, we would need the following from you. So it's upfront. It's not this mysterious like gray area. Because to be a hybrid worker, there are certain skills you need. For example, you've got to be able to manage your home environment. You've got to have a place and space that you can work in. There's a whole bunch of things. You know, you might, for example, not be the type of person that requires the kind of level of face-to-face contact that other people require. I mean, I've got a friend, for example, she's a brilliant administrator. She works very effectively 3 days from home. And in fact, because she doesn't need just her psychological needs to be around physically people all the time. That's just who she is. So we've got to start spelling this out in our recruitment, spelling it out in our job descriptions. And in a sense, we've got to recruit. If we want hybrid workers, we've got to target our recruitment to select people that are really going to thrive working as hybrid workers.
Yes, I agree.
It's no use recruiting a person who thinks they're going to work in a traditional work environment, getting them in and then saying, oh, by the way, you know, because some people actually don't adapt well to the hybrid model. That's the truth.
Yeah. We talk about selection and our recruitment plans being very clear, specific. Also having the right recruiter as well, the right interviewer, the right selection process. Because I find today candidates would also say what they think you want to hear to be able to get the job. So yes, you've made the advertisement clear. Yes, you've emphasized what the needs are, but you also want to make sure you have plans for people who may have assumed, oh, this I can do. You know, this is easy. So you want to have plans on how to manage them, because it's like getting a car. I mean, go out in the market searching for the perfect car that I look. And once I've gotten that car, it doesn't mean I don't invest time in ensuring that it runs smoothly, right? Mm-hmm. I still need to put in place plans to make sure, okay, this car meets all my expectations. I still have the job. I still need to maintain that car. So the same applies. And I'm sorry I'm using a car to imply people, but it's the same idea, you know. Irrespective of that announcement and that communication and the decision on, whoa, this is the module we're going to adopt, we don't stop there. We have to ensure that we evaluate, okay, what has changed since the last time we made a decision to adopt this module? what are some support that we can give to ensure that this particular module remains, the group tolerance remains strong? And we also have to be very comfortable to emphasize when that module doesn't work for us anymore, right? It's also equally important to be flexible to change. Because I have people be like, I thought we made a decision to do hybrid. Why are we making another change? Oh, I thought we made a decision to be working remotely. Why? There's always going to be change because circumstances change. Yeah.
Yeah. And then what about the, you know, what you're talking about now is a question I have for you, and it concerns me a lot, is okay, so we want to talk about how do we best support the hybrid model, for example. It's there, it's here to stay. And so let's talk about, first of all, the leadership of the hybrid model. So I pose a practical problem. You know, I have a manager, he's very, very good at what he does, and he's got to manage now a hybrid team. Okay, I don't want to get rid of this person because they're particularly good at what they do, but now they're managing a hybrid team for the first time. They've got people in the office, but they also got people they're managing remotely. Now, what kind of training do you think that person needs? What kind of skills do you think we need to be equipping that person with to effectively, and I'm particularly thinking of those people that are, you know, working from home or they don't see very often, because sometimes it's not even they come in weekly. Sometimes they come in once a month, or so they, for the majority of the time, they're remote. How do you make those people feel part of the organization and part of the team? What are some of the best things you've seen that people have done that have made that happen?
Yeah, there's so many options out there. And now I'm facing, I get questions like this as well. Even I actually ask myself the same question. I have a training coming up where I have two sets of people connecting to do the training. People who are going to be in front of me, people who are going to be online during the training. So it's a question that constantly comes up. And one of the things I always emphasize, and I'm actually doing the same, is always ask for those, for whoever, as someone managing hybrid team, what are some things I need to ensure that I'm actually able to do my job? Because I do have that remote and I do have that in person. So we want to sort of put that together. How can I engage my team in person? And how can I engage them remotely? So most of the time for hybrid work, you want to build a hybrid community. You want to you want to find a way to build that space where they still trust not being in front of you. They still trust. And you know what? I say this about building trust. It's very hard. I have two practicum students who are joining our team, and I can see that they've never done hybrid work before. And from the questions that they're asking, I can see that they are terrified. You know, they're not sure, they're not certain. And I actually reached out to the university and said, okay, I need you to step in and find a way to help make these people comfortable. So same as well, reach out to people who can support. So if these people are not reporting to you directly, or they have their managers, or they have other network of people they connect with, build that connection to make sure you get as many resources as possible to build that trust. Because there's what I call secondary connection or way of building trust. If I don't connect with somebody directly, when they know I connect with somebody they know in their network, that trust can also foster, right? So build connection with other people that they work with. Let people understand what is different in terms of their contribution, in terms of their performance if they are working remotely. Let them understand that. In my case, during a lecture, both ways, I want those who are online to know what is expected of them while they're connecting online. Those who are in person, I want them to know what's expected of them when they're connecting in person. I want to ensure activities are both engaging for both sets of people. And there's still the way of building that big community. Not, oh, we're all remote and we stick together, or we're all in person. As the person leading, you have to create a way to create an activity that builds, that makes everybody involved. I'm doing a training. There is what we call, I believe, I always miss this word. Guessing is called a METI. I use this METI meter. Using a METI meter, they have a code. So those who are in person can see the link and the code. Those who are online can see it. And they can interact and make suggestions on topics about, they can write about, and they are able to do this together, whether you're in person or whether you're remote, and they can share. And I tag somebody in person with somebody who is online. so that way they can connect.
Nice.
There's always a risk there, but we always have to find different ways. And also making sure resources are available. And we forget this. And I do that as well. When people are working remotely, do they have all the equipment? Do they have all the resources to be able to connect? Because we cannot assume that everyone is tech savvy, right? Mm-hmm. Do they have those? And if they have any issues, do they have somebody they can contact? Communication is also key. The way I communicate when I'm speaking to you in person, it will be different from online, especially when you can see me, because 75% of our communication is nonverbal. So how can you ensure that communication is clear when you have remote teams? Is it as simple as putting on camera? Is it as simple as them learning how to use all those emojis that we have online? Mm. All of these little things go online. So to summarize, training is important. Building connection is important. Build connection out of your community and let people know what the expectations are. Whether you're in person, whether you're remote, what are those expectations? How am I being measured? And when people have a clear understanding that, okay, this is what is expected of me, this is how I'm being measured, these are the resources I have, then they are more likely to quickly start being productive, right? So extensive coaching goes a long way, being able to be there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we, right now, we are doing our podcasts virtually and we do our podcasts in person. And I kind of find it easier when I see you, John, and I can talk to you and I see those little cues. So when we're online, we turn on our camera so we can still see those cues.
Exactly.
We can still, you know?
Exactly.
So we have to just find a way of making it work. And it's not just one person. It's a team effort. We all have to do it together.
Yeah. So I want to share something again, which is a little bit provocative, but it might be useful to some of our listeners here. So first of all, I want to say that if you want to build community, if you look back at history, and this is my academic philosophical background, one of the ways people have historically built community is they've created a meaningful ritual for community members. Initially, these were religious, which everybody participated in. The thing about the ritual space was that everybody had clearly defined roles. It wasn't just a general open meeting for anything to happen. It was the meeting was in a sense very tightly bound by a specific set of principles or practices. But nevertheless, people's individuality could show in that and that everybody participated in that. So building on that idea, years ago, I developed a ritual for some of my management teams that I worked with, where we would all sit in a circle at the end of the week, and every person would get a chance to share what they thought was their greatest success of the week, you know, what really worked for them. Yeah? And the key thing was we would listen to each other. Okay, we wouldn't try and solve business problems at that thing. We would just listen and affirm, oh, that was fantastic, right? And then at the end of that, around the circle, we have fun activity. We said we would kind of then vote on who we think had the greatest success. And I had a little funny, I had a feather put in a piece of wood. We call it the Flaming Feather Award. And that person kept that on their desk for the rest of the week. Okay. That was a real fun thing. There was another part to the ritual as well, which I collected a big jar of elephant dung because it was in Africa in a game reserve and I'd sealed it, right? And this was called the famous fluff up of the week. That was the polite version. And everybody had a chance to share in that circle where they had struggled, where they had messed up this week, okay? Because I wanted to encourage people to voice their vulnerability and feel comfortable that other team members are there to support. And it's not about condemnation, it's about learning. And so everybody went around the circle and they talked about when, you know, things had gone really wrong this week for them. And that was almost as more instructive than what went right, because people were hearing other people's vulnerability, but they're also hearing about the breakdown of the business system or things didn't function optimally and learning came. And we're able after the meeting to offer support. But again, the purpose was just to listen. And then we had the fun award and that person got this jar of dung kip on their desk for the rest of the week. Crazy stuff. Yeah. Now, when I worked with a client about a year ago where I got him to institute something, or her actually, something similar in the virtual space. So at the end of the week, the whole team, so those in the office would go online and those people who are out of the office would connect virtually. So everybody could see each other on Zoom. And they would do a version of this. It wasn't quite the same, but a similar version of this, where they would have two activities, or basically where they shared. And it wasn't just like the normal funny kind of fun team building games, in that it was directly work related, because, you know, some people get impatient with playing games. This was like directly related to the workplace, but there was this thing of where there was some fun involved and laughter, but we could basically share our learning with each other, right?
And
listening to that learning in a group space.
I love it.
Those kind of things, I find it worked really well. She's still using that activity and just loves it. It's a kind of, she says, the highlight of their week. Friday, they can't wait to. And then they have drinks afterwards. You know, those in the office, and then they join them with a cocktail. Everybody stays online with each other afterwards for a bit. And I don't know why, I'm just curious, because you're a seasoned HR practitioner. Anna, how does that relate to you? You know, I'm just a wacky philosopher maybe, but how does it?
That's why I love our conversation, you know, a philosopher meeting a HR professional. It just clinks. That's actually a very interesting story. And it takes me to what we like to call organizational learning. Right? Yes. You know, allowing the knowledge from one individual in the organization to be incorporated into the organization's culture and the way they do things.
Yes.
It's perfect. And, you know, today we forget, we are so blinded by job description. We're so blinded by titles and this is what you're meant to do, that we forget that the individuals that we've hired into our organizations would deal with the situation differently and come with a wealth of experience. They come with a wealth of expertise. They come with a different way of actually handling the situation. And we miss that. We miss the opportunity to capitalize on the knowledge that is already within the organization. And I love that. So each person going about talking, okay, this is what works for me. This is what didn't work. And we're learning from that. And most of the time when these, again, I could call this a brainstorming section happens, it also fosters connectivity, which brings us back to this beautiful series for this podcast, right? It's not only that learning that occurs, but through that learning, we build our culture. Through that learning, we improve our processes. Through that learning, we build connectivity. Through that learning, we create a space where people feel safe. So the advantages of it are they're endless. Okay. Imagine having a space where I can tell you how a particular experience or a particular change in the organization has impacted me, telling you how I've dealt with it. And I may not have a solution, but having in the same space others who have a solution that I can learn from, having in the same space others who have that solution that we can decide to use. Okay, we're going to take this, we're going to use that. Now, said that though, to answer your question, I find seriously that people are afraid to speak up. And most of the time, it could be as a result of their past experiences, because they know, they are aware, they have the answer, but they hold back. And that culture that has not given them the opportunity to share, even sometimes they may not have the answer right there or not know they have the answer. But a conversation can trigger them to come, you know what? What about this? Oh, actually, this happened to me. This is what I've done. So we also have to think about how can we make this possible? And that was a beautiful example where you can just start from people meeting and sharing insights and make the meeting optional. You know, you can meet in person or you can post your insight as well, because we still know that people are different. Some people are not comfortable with being confrontational. You know, some people would just rather just read, look, listen, and then contribute. And we'll create the space for all of that. Same thing in class. I finished a class section where we were having discussion, and a student comes, you know, well, we were talking about that topic yesterday. Mm-hmm. We were talking about that topic earlier. This is what I think. And I still appreciate that. I embrace that. And the next time I bring it up, without necessarily putting that person in the spotlight, but hopefully encouraging that person to continuously speak up.
Yeah.
But what organizations do is people share their experiences and they shut it down. And when you keep doing that, you're creating a culture where people are not comfortable to share. And that's an asset for you, organizational learning.
I think, you know, all dictatorships historically become stupid. because they closed down feedback, right? People are afraid to tell the dictator the truth. So all dictatorships implode because they become unintelligent.
Until next time, this is Gifty Parker and John Ballen.
Remember, during your busy week ahead, stay good, stay true, and stay beautiful.
Bye-bye.